sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right. It's not Beasties, but it's not bad. It's Monday morning. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Will Nault in with Eric Francis. Darren Haynes from flamesfrom80feet.ca. Don't enter in 90 feet. You won't get the right website. Flamesfrom80feet.ca. If you want an entirely different perspective on the Calgary Flames, I highly encourage you to go check out Haynes's site because, like I said, he brings something that nobody else looks at. When something really obscure happens in a Flames game, everybody kind of looks over at Haynes or starts checking their Twitter account to see when Haynes will tell you the last time it ever happened. Like if the night when the last streaker, we've had a bunch of streakers, but the last one who came over the glass and was concussed, Haynesy would have had a stat right away with the last time a guy was concussed when he coming over the glass.
He probably even knows the last time an attempted streaker was.
He knows it all. Haynesy, are you there?
It's one of my relatives, actually, so that's why I know that one.
That's what got you interested. It was really cold.
The master of obscurity. Is that my new title?
That's one of your many, many most positive traits. What did you see Saturday that stuck out in terms of what the difference was? Why were they so good? I mean, that's their first legitimate regulation win in 15 tries. That's something. How did that happen?
For me, it started 1 minute into the game when they got that early power play. And how often have we seen an early power play be pretty flat? I mean, it's almost the last thing you want to do if you're going to get a power play is get it that quickly into a game. And they got that early power play, and a power play that has not been very good for quite a while here. They poured on the pressure. They never got a goal, but I think they had three or four shots, and there was another one that was really close that was like a deflection wide. And the momentum started at that point, and they never gave it up. And so it wasn't their first wire-to-wire victory. They did Pittsburgh did come back to tie it briefly, but it was as close to a wire-to-wire win as they had. And it was pretty impressive for them to go out on a pretty tough road trip. It was probably a pretty good flight to Florida yesterday morning.
Yeah, the boys have to be feeling a whole lot better than they certainly were feeling before that. But again, that's three out of their last four that they've won, some of them ugly. This one, finally, a bit of a masterpiece against a darn good opponent, had won six in a row. Tell me about how important that win was in the grand scheme of things. Pinder was on earlier and said it was the biggest win in the history of the franchise. Where do you rank it? Is it somewhere? Like, obviously this year, there could be nothing more important than that win.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you know, I'd love to look in the crystal ball a month from now and look back and figure out if it was the biggest win, because we already thought they had the biggest win when they beat Detroit a while back. So, yeah, the biggest wins are only that if you can follow them up with a win. So we'll see. I mean, this is a road trip that is interesting. You know, they played a stinker in Florida last year and still won because they, I don't know if you remember it, and this is for Kerry Ramos' sake, this is one of his poorest games, was in Florida last year where he got the hook and they came back to win with Hiller in relief. So Florida's going to be tough. But then, I mean, Florida will be tough. And then they have Tampa Bay, Washington, and Chicago. So if this win can lead them to a road trip that maybe they come back with 5 points or something, I think we would look back on this as a pretty significant win. But if they go 0-4 on this road trip, then, yeah, it wasn't so significant. So at this point in the juncture, absolutely, it's a big one, just in terms of quality of the opponent, the as you said, the legitimacy of the victory. Like, it was never really in doubt. They just played well. All the pairings played well. The lines played well. So it's just a matter of whether they can actually ride this and turn it into anything. That's what remains to be seen.
It's Eric Francis here with Will Nault. We're talking to Darren Haynes, flamesfrom80feet.ca.
Darren, you look at Sam Bennett right now, 2 points again on Saturday, and obviously that highlight reel goal where he absolutely undressed Ian Cole on the way to the net. But you look at Sam Bennett now, 8 points in his last six games, and obviously outside of the role of increased ice time, but what have you seen from Sam Bennett in that stretch?
confidence. We've seen, I just was wondering, when are we going to see the dynamic, fast skating, quick lateral moves, that guy that's always a big presence on the ice? When are we going to see that version of Sam Bennett that we've seen in other environments? And I get that there's a lot of comparisons that you don't want to carry over to the NHL season when you see a guy play in such something like the rookie tournament in Penticton. But the one thing that you can see from players in that environment is their speed and that kind of the game. And we just haven't seen that from Sam Bennett for the first couple of weeks of the season. But once he got that first goal, you get a sense that, will this be kind of the turning point for him? Will this kind of be the point where he turns it on? And has he ever since that? So now we're starting to see a guy who is, I mean, the goal that he scored, that highlight reel goal that he scored on Saturday, to me epitomizes exactly what he's doing now. He is carrying that puck with confidence. He's attacking the defense. He's not letting them defend him. He's going right at them. And that's a very confident, a very assertive Sam Bennett. And that's the player that he is, and why fans should be very excited about what this player will become down the road.
I'm stunned by the irony of him saying that confidence is the difference. Yeah. Because there's a guy who's never short of confidence, but I guess it comes in waves, right? On the ice, it's something that he just is lacking on the ice. Because off the ice, when we talk to him, we can never believe how confident he is, bordering on cocky, but in a respectful way as a young rookie. But it's amazing how he'd lost even a touch of that along the way.
I think for young players, and they'll never admit this, but I think for young players, goals and assists, those classic two categories, that's the fuel for them. I think they really thrive on that, on being on the score sheet and contributing in that way. I don't think there's any amount of good defensive plays that can make up for being on the score sheet when you're at that age. And so, again, he had that, one assist for the longest time, but he got the goal, and then it's been just a kind of a different player ever since. So I think that's just as simple as that for young players.
Bob Hartley mentioned he's going to kind of give the ball to Ramo here and let him run with it. But this road trip now with four games here, do you see a potential where we see Joni Ortio on this road trip? And I guess more on the Ramo front, do you like the idea of giving the ball to Ramo? Because for me, you talk about the confidence in Sam Bennett. Well, despite the results, keep throwing Ramo in there game after game after game. That gives him confidence as well. And it gives more structure to the team knowing that they've got the same guy in net every game.
I think stability is something that's been missing all year. From the line combinations to the defense pairings to the consistently rotating goaltender, I think getting back to having stability can be helpful and will be helpful. And we've seen that in Ramo's play where he's settling in. He knows that one bad goal isn't going to be an automatic sitting on the bench for that next game. So when will we see someone else? Well, we have a back-to-back coming up on Thursday, Friday. But I don't think it's a guarantee. I mean, I think, Ramo will play against Florida for sure. It would be hard to see, unless there's a scenario where he really gets lit up, that he doesn't come back and go with Ramo again against Tampa Bay, just given his recent body of work. And then that's the big one for me. The Tampa Bay to Washington on the Friday. But if he's coming off a win on Thursday, man, goaltenders used to play we're familiar with how much a number one goaltender plays. And the fitness level of players is only going up every season. There's no way that it would be an issue for Ramo to come back and play again on Friday after the Thursday. So I think it really hinges on how that Thursday goes and where this team is at. But I don't think Ortio gets in before Friday at the earliest.
Yeah, I'm with you. Coaches always talk about confidence. If they don't have confidence in a player, they're not going to play him that much, and they certainly aren't playing him in the last couple minutes of a game. Same goes for goaltenders, and we know. The body of work this year has shown us that Bob Hartley does not have the confidence just as yet of Joni Ortio. He's spoken of it in kind of veiled terms, but obviously he's just shown that he doesn't want to go with a rookie in net, and especially at a time when you're trying to dig out of a massive hole. So I would not be surprised if Ramo played all three games, and I agree with you, unless he gets lit up. If he gets lit up, then you basically almost have to look to your rookie and give Ramo at least one night off. Tell me about Sid the Kid. On Saturday, he was -4. That's a stat that I don't think we've seen many times in his career following a game. Was he that bad out there in your eyes, or was he still a pretty, predominant, productive player?
You want the master of obscurity to tell you how many times he's been -4?
If you can tell me that.
I can tell you.
That does not surprise me. Third time.
-5. He took a -5 last spring, because I remember when that happened. I'm like, has he ever done that before? No, he had not. And I can't remember. I think it might have been against San Jose or something. But third time only ever that he's hit the old -4 or worse. But, he wasn't as – I think Calgary did a very good job of defending him. And I made a couple notes where different Flames defensemen made really good plays against Crosby. And it started, if you go back to the game, in the very first shift, he was out there against Flames' third pairing. And Derek Englund made a really strong play against him along the boards, basically just tied him up, pushed him and the puck back out of the zone. And I think Chris Russell had a nice play defending him later in the game. I can't remember, but I had and they just were playing well. But Calgary played a very sound defensively game, and as it turned out, as Pittsburgh pushed for the, kind of the go-ahead goal, he ended up being the guy that was on the ice as Calgary was able to answer back. So I don't think it was a terrible game, but certainly it was one of the better games, probably the best game Calgary has had in terms of shutting down Crosby, because he's scored a lot against the Flames in the past.
How about Phil the Thrill? That, it's funny to me when teams come to town, there are different reasons why people want tickets. Obviously, when Sidney Crosby comes to town, that's the main selling point around the National Hockey League. Malkin would be that guy in any other city, but because he's overshadowed by Sid. Did you see anything from Phil that made you think, nah, he's still fat, he's still, not living up to his potential, or did he impress you in any way?
Neither, I would say. I mean, Phil Kessel is what he is. I don't think you would put me in as the kind of the leader of his fan club by any means. He does what he does, and that was the game. He gets one chance, and he kind of curls out and just rifles one into the low corner, picks the puck. So he can score, certainly can score, but just not the impact player that I think people have kind of always expected. The impact on games versus goal ratio is not quite what you'd think it would be for Kessel. So, we'll see how many goals he ends up this season with. Maybe does he get the 40? Does he end up in the 30s somewhere? But I'm not sure he's going to be the reason that Pittsburgh gets into the playoffs, if they continue to play as well as they have.
It's Eric Francis and Will Nault. We're talking to Darren Haynes from Flames from 80feet.ca, the master of obscurity. What is happening with Sean Monahan, in your opinion? There are actually a lot of rumors out there as to what might be wrong with him and what's contributing to him not being the player that he was last year or even the year before. Your theory on where he's at and why?
I don't know. It's interesting. I don't really have a theory. I mean, he looks almost a bit tired or lethargic on the ice. And that's, is that a virus? Is he cold or anything like that? But I haven't heard anything to that. So that's kind of the impression that you get. It just didn't seem to have the same spark. But maybe it's been one of these kind of snowball effects where kind of the expectations. I mean, the expectations are huge on this guy. To see his goal scoring jump up to 30 goals last year from 20s, and people, I think, just naturally expecting that to progress or at least to repeat that. And when he didn't score much early, that tended to weigh on him. And, Bob Hartley talked about that after the game, said he had a sit down with Sean Monahan on Saturday morning and said, look, and Monahan, I think it actually Monahan came to him and said, I'm pressing, I just feel like I'm on my heels. And Hartley just said, go out and enjoy the game, have fun. And when he scored that goal, the look on his face, like you could just sense the relief and that he was feeling. First multi-point game of the season. I'm really interested to see if this is a bit of a turnaround for him, and this road trip will be a great indication. But certainly hasn't been the player that people have come to expect, but he certainly dodged the sophomore slump, which is a thing for a reason. It happens to a lot of young players, so maybe it's just a little bit late arriving. But, the multi-point game, probably his best game of the season on Saturday, we'll see if that turns as a bit of a rallying point for him.
Would you bother re-signing him next year? I'm kidding.
Probably not. No, I think he's got a fourth, fifth, middle round.
Don't go at the deadline.
Here. Hey, lots of centers.
Yeah, dump him at the deadline.
We don't, him and Hoedler, I think, are as good as gone. I think that's pretty obvious.
Absolutely. Darren, just last one for me. And, you know, you had the fun question of prediction on a road trip, and kind of we were all in agreement this morning around the table about, you know, the Flames kind of have to go on a streak to kind of get back into this thing. We're talking 7-8 wins in a row, but that's likely not going to happen yet until they, you know, kind of turn a corner. But you look at this road trip, 4 games, 8 points on the table. What do you consider a successful road trip?
Given the stops, I'd say if they a successful road trip, if they come back 500, to be honest.
Yeah.
And they're not as far out of it. I just don't get the notion of this. You know, they have to really fight to get back in this race.
Not in the Central. That's a good thing, right?
You know, and that's the thing, right? The stat was trotted out last week about, you know, historically a team with so many points at a certain point has not made the playoffs. But the thing that's so unique about the Western Conference this year is it's not about being in the top eight in the Western Conference, because six of those teams are going to be in the Central. One of the teams is going to miss. So you can't kind of go off that historical data, because Calgary could be ninth in the conference and get in easily as third in the Pacific. Right now, San Jose sits third in the Pacific. They're projected. They're basically at 14 points in 14 games. They're on an 82-point pace, and they're in a playoff spot right now. So I think last year was an anomaly to take 97 points to get in the playoffs. Edmonton's going to be better this year. Arizona's better this year. There's going to be less points. It's going to flatten everything out. And so I wouldn't be surprised if this year that number is closer to even 90 or 91 points to get in the playoffs. So I don't think Calgary is as far out as people think, and it's all to do with the current playoff format and the fact that they're in the Pacific Division.
You know, I'll counter that, because I was the one who trotted out that stat. I will counter that by just reminding everybody that Anaheim right now is still not in a playoff spot. And you know that Anaheim is going to be battling. Anaheim's going to be in the playoffs.
They already look like they've turned it around.
Yeah, they've turned it around already, and they will continue to get better and better. So, you know, that's one more obstacle you have between you and the playoffs. It's not as dire as I think that stat, you know, makes it look. And it is unique, I'll give you that. But I think people often forget you've still got Anaheim, you've got a leapfrog, and that's not easy to do. We're talking to Darren Haynes, flamesfrom80feet.ca. You can catch him on that website. You can also catch him. He writes for Canadian Press. He's all over this team. And so what do you do when they go on the road? You just eat bonbons and hang out watching CFL reruns?
Yeah, I hang out in my house shivering because I have a broken furnace right now. So that's what's going on this week.
That's fun.
No fun.
Okay.
Broken furnace, broken garage door on Saturday. I'm on a string of bad luck. When I chipped a tooth on Saturday. So it hasn't been a good weekend.
Well, that's three right there. Bad things come in three. So I think you're all right.
I'm good for hopefully a few years, but I'll be watching from the comforts of the couch. And actually, I enjoy when they're on the road, just because, you know, when you're writing, you know, it's harder to watch and write. You know, you got a lot of things that have to be ready. I mean, you have to have those stories done and written by the time the game ends. So third period, you're often counting on the crowd noise to tell you when something good is about to happen, something interesting is about to happen.
Yeah.
So on the road, it's quite a luxury. I quite enjoy, because you can see, watch the games more intently and have a better sense of how everybody's doing, instead of just kind of the more top players that you see.
Absolutely. And when you're at home in the comforts of your basement, you don't have Randy Sportak constantly asking you questions and bugging you in different ways.
Tapping on the shoulder.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm just kidding. Randy's my boy. Hey, Darren, thanks again so much. Again, flamesfrom80feet.ca. If you don't watch it with regularity, you're missing out. We will talk to you again next week, Darren. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one, Eric.
Okay. It is, what time is it? 9:22-ish. We'll be back with Jason Lockenfora, your NFL insider, right here on the Fan 960.
Talking sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
They said it couldn't be done. They said Peyton Manning couldn't go undefeated. It was just a matter of time before all the cracks in the armor turned into a loss. And it happened big time yesterday. An interesting week in the NFL, as it always is. A few more teams still undefeated.
Yep.
But not his.
Got three left. Carolina, New England, and if you believe it, the Cincinnati Bengals. But the all-world-class defense in Denver couldn't bail them out yesterday, as they fall 27-23.
I don't know why everyone's so surprised at Cincinnati. Icky Woods is still one of the best running backs in the game. Anyway, we talked to our NFL insider earlier to get the scoop on Icky and everybody NFL.
Sportsnet 960's NFL insider Jason Lacanfora is brought to you by Shanks. Monday Night Football tonight at Shanks North and Shanks South as the San Diego Chargers take on the visiting Chicago Bears. Featuring $3.95 chicken wings and $5.50 Bud Light draft. Shanks Sports Grill, your NFL headquarters in Calgary.
Jason, last time we spoke, there was four undefeateds in the NFL. That number carved down by one. What happened with the Denver Broncos? Of all the places you thought they might stumble, I got to be honest, it wasn't the Indy game I was worried about.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I'm sitting there watching it with the guys from the NFL Today yesterday, and it's kind of what we all thought was going to happen Monday night against Green Bay, right? We thought if they kind of got exposed, well, and I say that, like, they are who they are. So, I mean, this was coming, but I didn't think it was going to be in Indianapolis. But you never know. I mean, turmoil and you know, tumult bring out different things in different people. And for the Indianapolis Colts, where, you know, Andrew Luck lost his longtime coach, Pep Hamilton, and where, you know, the stuff started really hitting the fan there with them, you know, hitting rock bottom and falling this to whatever it was, 3-5. They came out, and look, their coordinator, Rob Gronkowski, he can play big boy football. Frankly, I think he should have had that job calling plays for Luck years ago. And he was not going to let them be out physical. They were not going to just stop feeding Frank Gore. They were not going to have Andrew Luck dropping back 5- and 7-step drops on first down early in the game and putting himself in situations where they turned the ball over or dug a big hole. He was going to avoid 3rd and 15 at all costs. He was going to get those tight ends involved, and he was going to go with more max protection, more 2 tight end sets where guys are blocking. And then if they're able to engage in a pass route after that, they would do so. But the priority was blocking for Andrew Luck and blocking in the run game. It was not going to be too cute. They weren't going to outthink themselves. And, I mean, let's face it, up until that punt, you know, that return touchdown at the end of the first quarter, that was about as thorough of a beatdown as you could see. I mean, Denver had no life at all in any unit. Not offense, not defense, special teams, until that return. And then that return and the big play to start the second half to Sanders, I think it was, all of a sudden we had a ball game. But let's not kid ourselves. Denver was chasing that from the onset. And Denver looked like a team that was just hoping and praying and clinging that they could make some plays. And I think the big issue was they could not run the football again. And we'll see. You know, when we're talking in December, we'll see if we're talking about a reborn Peyton Manning and a reborn Denver run game and a reborn offensive line, or we'll see if we're saying, man, do you remember that primetime game against the Packers when Denver actually looked like an NFL offense? You know, how did they do that? You know, what was that? Because that may be the anomaly. Because C.J. Anderson looked like the guy who was slow-footed and indecisive and unsure. And Peyton Manning looked like, for most of that game, the same old Peyton Manning, hoping a prayer on a sideline pass, not a whole lot of conviction, not a whole lot of zip on the ball. And the offensive line was getting, you know, pushed around by a Colts defense that is anything but physical and has holes all over the place. So, you know, Denver, the biggest thing for Denver was that Oakland, you know, lost that crazy, heartbreaking game for them in Pittsburgh because, you know, Denver's going to win that division. They're going to get a home playoff game. But you guys know, I've been a skeptic on them all year, particularly on offense. I don't think Peyton Manning's going to get much better. He'll bring any given week, he might be able to bring it if everything falls into place. If you can support him with a top-notch run game and amazing protection and the other team's pass rushers might be injured or nicked up or whatever, they catch the right team at the right time, great. I continue to think this is not a team that's going to get into January and reel off 3 or 4 straight wins, but maybe I'm wrong.
So if it was a pretty big loss for Denver, at least one that that resonates, how about that win for Carolina? I mean, that was not what we expect. That was dominant against a very good Green Bay team, or what we thought was a very good Green Bay team.
Yeah. No, I mean, and again, that's one where if you stop the game after 3 quarters, it would almost be like stopping a heavyweight fight where somebody's just hemorrhaging blood all over the place and the ref would have stepped in and said, you know, no mas. Now, as it stands, they kept playing football. And Aaron Rodgers did Aaron Rodgers things. And, I mean, for that to be a one-possession game, what, they're down eight and they're in the red zone again with a couple of minutes left. I frankly don't know how Green Bay did it, but the ultimate takeaway there is just another big win for Carolina. And they're winning that division. It's just a matter of by how many games. And I have a hard time thinking they're not the number one seed in the NFC. I mean, I have a hard time thinking that they're not getting a bye. I mean, they've got head-to-head wins over Seattle, who, you know, may still come out of the West and certainly is going to push Arizona. They've got the head-to-head over Green Bay. So all they have to do is finish equal with those teams if they slip up. I mean, there's nobody out of the East. I mean, you guys saw that crap again last night. I mean, you know, the Giants or the Eagles, whatever, those are basically 500 teams at best. So Carolina has built up enough of a cushion now where they're going to be able to rest some people in December. They're going to be able to call their own shots and still know we're going to get a bye. Just a super physical football team. I mean, Cam Newton, I mean, if you want to say Tom Brady over him, you can, but you're not going to convince me there's anybody else who you would put second in the MVP race. I mean, rushing touchdowns, rushing third downs, amazing passes on third down. Some of the dimes he was dropping to Ted Ginn, 50, 60-yard passes, leading guys into the end zone, doing it without a whole lot of natural weapons. I just have immense respect for what they've done, the patience that they showed Ron Rivera, letting that program flourish and come to life. And obviously defensively, they can knock you out. It's just a very, very good football team. And Green Bay's got some issues right now. There's no doubt about it. I mean, skirmishes on the sidelines, a lot of frustration, guys looking at each other, pointing fingers. That's not Mike McCarthy football. And offensively, they really look as clueless as I've ever seen them look, where it's almost like their fingers are crossed and they're hoping a play works. Rather than that's a team that usually went into the huddle with conviction and knew that at any given time McCarthy could call five or six different plays that they just had confidence that the other team can't stop even if they know it's coming. That's not them right now, and I think it's inevitable that Mike McCarthy takes over offensive play calling duties again at some point and really puts his stamp all over the game plan. As much as he wants to delegate and this or that, that does not look like Green Bay's offense. And the part of it is the injuries to the offensive line, and part of it is Eddie Lacy has put on too much weight or whatever, but still, they've got to be better than what they were. And the defense, again, is just not that it just hasn't been that good all year. So they've got some issues.
Are the Patriots still the class of the league? Because, you know, I think the debate that people still have, you know, the Panthers, Cincinnati, New England. I know New England didn't have its best weekend ever, but are they still the team to beat?
I don't see how they're not. I mean, so they were, what, 2-2 last year after 4 weeks, right? And we were all, myself included, saying, wait a minute, maybe this is truly the end, and maybe they're running out of... I mean, what have they done since? Have they lost since then? I mean, I'm just being honest. Like, didn't they finish, like, they had those final 12 games, did they go, like, 11-1 or something? And then they ran the table in the playoffs, and they haven't lost this year? I mean, if someone wants to make the argument for Cincinnati or Carolina or whatever, you know, Godspeed, but when you put together what they've literally done in the last 13 months of the calendar year, including the playoffs, and then you also look at the historical prism of they go to the championship game every year and they win the Super Bowl every 2 to 3 years, I don't see how you could even make the case for anybody else. And just the way they reinvent themselves, so they went back to being a power run team yesterday because it made the most sense for them. And they just plowed, you know, they used LeGarrette Blount, and they plowed through that Redskins defense early. And they just had their way with them. Now, did they run up the score the way they could have in some other games or whatever? No, but they're so smart. You know, the onside kick early to steal a possession, to make that a two-possession game, to force the Redskins to have Kirk Cousins throwing the ball around more and not be able to stick with the three running backs there, which would have been their original approach. I mean, they're so good. They're so good, and they don't beat themselves. And, I mean, they're going to be a tough out. I mean, they care. Like, some of these teams, I really don't know how much. Like, do I really think in the back of their minds the Cincinnati Bengals think they can go 16-0? No, I don't. Do I think the Panthers? I don't think those teams even care about it. Like, I just don't. Like, Cincinnati, they just know they got to win a playoff game. You know, the Panthers know they're not the deepest team in the world. They want to try to stay healthy. I think they'll rest some guys down the stretch. We know New England cares. They care about records. They care about precedent. They care about history. They've done this run before, and you're not going to be able to convince me they're not trying to do it again.
Pittsburgh Steelers lose Big Ben in a 38-35 win, his second game back from that knee injury, and now he's out again, which looks like it's going to be about 3 weeks. What do we know there? And crucial time of the season, is that going to be a big, major impact on their playoff chances?
Well, they've got the late bye. So the good news for them is he's not going to play against Cleveland this week. And then they've got the bye. Their hope is he's back for the Seattle game at the end of the month. Knowing him, I think that's probably realistic. He avoided a major Lisfranc foot injury that would have put his season in peril. So basically they're looking at it as we got to find a way to survive the Browns. And look, the Browns are the worst run team in the league, run-stopping team. So I would think, you know, Landry Jones, yeah, he's limited, obviously, but if they could just get D'Angelo Williams going, get some different people involved in the run game, you know, they might just be able to keep it on the ground and beat Cleveland, you know, and then you go to your bye, and then you try to make your December run with Ben, and you hope you can keep him healthy. The problem for them is their offensive line is taking a lot of hits now, and we saw DeCastro go out in and out of the game yesterday. They're really teetering at a point where if they lose one more, you know, starting caliber offensive lineman, you have to start to worry, because obviously they're doing it without Pouncey now. They're doing it without Beecham, their left tackle. They hope to get Pouncey back here at some point, but I'm a little worried about that. And defensively, they've kind of slipped up, and when they played better quarterbacks, they've suffered, which is the case for most teams in this league. But that was surviving that game yesterday was absolutely huge, and if they make the playoffs, you're going to be able to go back to that Monday night game in San Diego when they punched it in late, and you're going to be able to go back to that game at home yesterday where they survived an Oakland team that was pushing them and giving them everything they had. And really, you know, looked like Oakland was going to take that game over at a couple of different points. So Steelers are still experienced. Mike Tomlin's a great coach. They found a way to win that game, and they stay in the thick of the playoff hunt.
Jay, final one for you. Monday night or tonight will certainly not be a playoff preview. It's Bears, Chargers, mm-hmm. both teams sitting at two wins, and yet this could be a wild one. These are two teams that have the ability to put up offense and both also have all kinds of holes defensively.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see the game plans. And if somebody scores early and it becomes one of those boat race games, then, you know, with these two offenses, they may just open it up. And it could be a lot like that Saints-Giants game of 2 weeks ago where, you know, each team put up over 500 yards of offense. And whichever quarterback had the ball in his hands last was going to win. Neither team can really stop anybody. Neither team can muster a pass rush. Both teams are very beat up and depleted on both sides of the ball, really, especially San Diego. I don't even know, with the state of the Chargers offensive line and their sort of issues with Melvin Gordon any given week, I don't even know how much they're going to try to run the ball. Matt Forte is out for the Bears. You know, it could just be a night where Cutler and Phillip Rivers play pitch and catch all over the field, and that wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, Rivers is on record pace, and the Chargers aren't going anywhere this year, and the only thing they may be able to salvage in what could be their last year in San Diego is trying to have Phillip Rivers, you know, flirt with 6,000 yards passing.
Whew.
So, yeah, I mean, it could be a fun game in that regard. I don't think it's going to be, you know, necessarily quality football. You know, and as we noted, both these teams have significant holes all over the place. But, yeah, it may be fun in its own right. And you know, I will say this, because I've been among them to jump on this guy in the past. Jay Cutler's had a nice little year, and if he hadn't missed a couple of games there, you know, I think we'd probably be talking about him a little bit more, but he hasn't had Alshon Jeffrey for most of the year. Forte's been in and out, and he's not turning the ball over, and he is making plays, and I think it's gone unnoticed, but the hiring of coordinator Adam Gase has been good, really, really good for Cutler. Now, they're horrifically bad on defense, but offensively, you know, I think they've done some things, and they've made some strides. And they've been a competitive team for the most part, which just was not the case last year, you know, where they were rolling over and they'd fall behind early and then they'd just go in a corner and let the other team kick them for 60 minutes.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen, our NFL insider, Jason LaCanfora. It's Eric Francis here with Will Nault. We'll be back in just a couple minutes to talk about what I would consider to be the greatest story to come out of the Ontario Hockey League since Eric Lindros played there. You're listening to the Sportsnet Fan 960.
Talking sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet Fan 960. Just wrapping up a Monday morning. Kind of gloomy out. When you woke up, you probably thought, oh, that's, isn't that delightful? A nice dusting of snow. The kids will be happy. Christmas is coming. I better order my Christmas lights. I better put them up or turn them on from last year, whatever the case is. Will Nault and Eric Francis here. So many things that I wanted to get to today we didn't get a chance to get to because we had so many guests. But this story out of the OHL with the Flint Firebirds absolutely fascinates me.
You love this one.
I do love this one. Because I've never heard anything like it in my life. So I didn't even know Flint had a team in the Ontario Hockey League.
We just found out this morning that they were Plymouth Whalers the last 7 years.
Plymouth Whalers moved to Flint. Things aren't going as well in Flint as you would expect. Because typically everything in Flint has gone just swimmingly. What a terrible place to live.
I love the tweets yesterday after the... you know, as the story kind of broke and stuff was developing, you saw the, where's Jackie Moon in the Flint Tropics?
Oh, wow. Nice drop.
Yeah.
So the owner of the Flint Firebirds decides after probably their most stirring win in franchise history last night, they come back against the defending Memorial Cup champions. They're down 3-1. They win 4-3 in a shootout. And how do they celebrate? The owner comes down and fires the coach. Now, it's widely been reported that he fired the coach largely because his son plays on the team, the owner's son. And you can stop me if this sounds familiar, Calgarians, because we went through this with Frederick, with the Stampeders. But apparently his son wasn't getting enough ice time. He's a 17-year-old rookie in the Ontario Hockey League. He's only dressed for 5 games so far this year, and he hasn't seen the ice much at all. As most 17-year-old defensemen in the Ontario Hockey League would probably be positioned to do, which is sit a little bit and watch. Anyway, here's where the story gets really sexy. Every single player of the team revolted, was so angry when they heard about the firing, and they all generally, I guess, believe it has to do with the same thing, which is the Sun's ice time. One by one, they went up to the owner's office and the GM's office, laid down their jersey on the floor and said, I quit.
They did the Rudy.
So right now, the Flint Firebirds don't have anyone to play Friday against the Sarnia Sting. The backlash to this is going to be relentless. The league is in for quite a week, well, quite a handful of days until they got to get a team out on the ice. There's no doubt in my mind, or yours, Will, you tell me, that they will be on the ice Friday. Probably all those players who resigned, quit, whatever you want to call it, are now going to be back in the lineup. The question is, how do you bridge the gap between the two sides?
That's the thing. I mean, now what do you do, right? Because you could bring the coach back and then the players would follow because they're clearly battling for their coach here. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of bridges to build back up mm-hmm. now after everything that happened over the weekend.
We spoke to Elliot Friedman earlier in the day, and he was saying that there's one player in there who's going to be a pretty high draft pick. He's in the top 20 in scoring in the league. They've also got a couple top prospects on that team. These guys are going to want to play hockey, and obviously they're going to play hockey. The question is, what role does the league play? I think the first move obviously is up to the owner of the team to come to his senses perhaps and realize he probably is going to have to bring that coach back or do something to appease the players.
Well, if you're not following OHL Insiders on Twitter, you probably should if you're interested in this story, because right now it looks like we've got a 12 o'clock Eastern meeting with David Branch, the OHL and CHL commissioner, with the owner of the Flint Firebirds, Rolf Nilsson. And it also looks like his son has just been traded. So that could change things as well, as, his son appears to be traded, waiting to confirm that. But that is an interesting development as well.
And it's funny because that's one of the first things that when we spoke to Elliot about, that was something that we all agreed upon. The kid has got to have to get traded no matter what. As the owner's son, and it's now been exposed that the guy pulled a Frederick and is trying to get his son more ice time, that's got to be dealt with first, and it sounds like it has been. So that's one problem out of the way. Now it's how do you proceed fixing this problem between the coach and the players.
Yeah, it looks like Sudbury Wolves have acquired the owner's son and waiting to confirm, but that's what the OHL Insiders are reporting right now. If you haven't followed them on Twitter, you can do so at OHL Insiders. They've got all the latest on this story as it continues to develop in this morning. And latest tweet from 2 minutes ago, Håkan Nilsson, who is the owner's son, is no longer listed on the Flint Firebirds active roster. So that looks like that trade has happened and kind of slowly developing. And the whole thing here, Eric, is you know, sounds like scouts believe that son could play in the OHL, but just wasn't ready yet. The Firebird staff said, you know, he's got the skills, but just not ready to be here yet. He shouldn't be on the team at age 17. Maybe at 18, there's maybe a chance, but right now, not really ready for it. So that could change a lot of things, but I wonder now what happens, because like you mentioned, you bring everything back, but then what do you do, right?
Yeah,
there's a lot of more here than just the owner's son.
I've got a son in first year Timbits, and I'm terrified of hockey dad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm terrified of all the stories I've heard for years and years and years, me now living them out with hockey dads that are way too overzealous, think their kids are better than they are, blah, blah, blah. This is the penultimate hockey dad, you know, who buys a team so that his son will have a place to play regular minutes when he's not even ready. Stunning story. Glad David Branch is on it. He's a pretty good administrator. He will meet with them at noon Eastern time, which is in minutes
away,
from now.
So, yeah.
And you might want to watch at OHL Insiders on Twitter, because they have lots of updates on where this has been, where it's going. And I just want to know how uncomfortable the next family meal is with that son and dad sitting across from one another. Because don't forget, of all the players who went in and quit and coached, quit, you know, with the GM, the son was one of them. He widely reported that he was one of them who went in and laid down his jersey and said, I'm out too. So anyway, that's a great story. Another good story from the National Hockey League last night. Bobby Farnham is an AHL call-up, was playing for New Jersey last night. They were playing against the Vancouver Canucks, who lost for the ninth time this year, a one-goal game. That's actually an NHL record. No team has started this season with all nine wins, all being one by one goal. The previous record was seven games in a row. But it shows you they're close, but also they can't finish. But anyway, Bobby Farnham is a tough guy, called up from the AHL, fights Jake Virtanen, and everybody's familiar with that name, former Calgary Hitman. So a 19-year-old kid fighting a AHL tough guy. Obviously, the AHL tough guy came out on top. Virtanen hung in there, but afterwards, he was very animated in the press, in the penalty box, trash-talking, just going a little over the top for a win over a 19-year-old. Brandon Prust, the tough guy, former Calgary Flame, of course, twice, and obviously now the tough guy in Vancouver. He's injured. He's sitting at home on his couch. He took none too kindly to it, grabbed his phone, and tweeted immediately once he saw this. I'm just calling up the tweet. You got it there?
Yeah, just pulling it up here. Yeah, wow, Bobby Farnham, you're so tough, acting like that after fighting a 19-year-old, go back to the A.
I would really love to see the next. It's unfortunate they only play once more this year, the Devils and the Canucks. I hope Prust is back in the lineup.
And you hope Farnham
is. And
I
hope Farnham is in there too, because that would be one of the more anticipated tussles we're going to have in this season. But yeah, Prust is absolutely right. And I love that he did this and sent this message right away. It's been retweeted 1,800 times all around the National Hockey League, I guarantee you. Because it's not right that an AHL tough guy would A, fight a 19-year-old who's not a fighter, and B, squawk on and on about it afterwards.
See, I don't have as big of a problem with the fight, but the aftermath stuff is where it's like, okay, like that's enough, you know? Like, yeah, Virtanen's not a fighter. Everybody knows that. He's a physical player, but he's not a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't have a problem with the fight. Go ahead. But, yeah, you don't. There's no need for that stuff after, especially when you're a career AHL guy and you're fighting a rookie.
Yeah, yeah. It's Eric Francis here with Will Nault. We still have a couple more minutes before we hit the top of the hour and we get you to the Jim Rome Show. One last story that I wanted to hit on. Don Cherry on Saturday, and Don Cherry is who he is. He went on and said that the Philadelphia Flyers, injured Connor McDavid on purpose. Thoughts, Will Nault?
Where to even start? Well, I mean, has he watched the tape?
You would assume that at some point Ron made him watch it, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure, I think you've seen the tape, everybody's seen the tape. Well, let me tell you, Eric, I don't think the Flyers pushed the old Connor McDavid down. I'm pretty sure he lost an edge.
Yeah.
And, you know, those three guys, you know, the two Flyers fell with him. But there was no physical contact to actually push him over. He lost an edge and slid into the boards. And you actually brought up a good point. And Connor, you know, kind of made the instinct himself when he was sliding in. He ducked his turtle's head so he wouldn't go head first and you know, made lots of the blow with his shoulders.
It could have been a lot worse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We could be talking about a broken neck here.
He's suggesting that as the trio
hit
the ice and were obviously destined to hit the boards at a very high rate of speed and very awkwardly, that there was an extra shove in there just before he hit the boards. So if you've got time today and you want to look at the tape one more time, I implore you to check it out and just see if you agree with Don Cherry. I don't.
No, that's an interesting take.
90% of the time, I don't. But anyway, he is a brilliant entertainer, and we got to give him credit for that. We're going to do it all again tomorrow. Will Nault, Retro will be in tomorrow, of course, and Ryan Pinder. I'm Eric Francis. It's been a pleasure. It's 9:58 here on Sportsnet, the Fan 960.